Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. The Raptors roll to their fifth straight win.
Lowry has it. Hands it to JV in the lane. Right hand hook. Great job by Valanciunas. He's been a one-man wrecking crew tonight. Green picked off by Ross to Lou Williams. The man can do it all, and he dunks it down. Fires down a one-hander.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
803 Brady and Walker, good morning. Give us a call, 416-870-0590. Here's the question. Raptors, after another win last night, are 12-2. If you say Eastern Conference title, if you say an NBA Finals appearance, could it be in the cards? Is that...
I'm going to get moist if you keep this up.
Is that eye-rollingly putting the cart before the horse? Could it be a reality?
You think the Raptors are the only Toronto team I like besides the... That's the Rock.
I think that. You're right. I do think that.
And the U of T Varsity Blues. 416-870-0590, star 590, 888-666-0590. I had a conversation with a sports person Thursday, and he kind of nodded, and I said, why are we afraid to go big on not necessarily a prediction, but an optimistic outlook? That's a different thing than a prediction for the Raptors. And we agreed there's NBA Finals. That was before drumming Milwaukee, going in and beating Cleveland after getting just embarrassed in the first quarter. The next 36 minutes of basketball were embarrassing for the home team. And that's certainly after a hard-fought win last night against a good Western team. They're not going to keep this pace up, Andrew. They won't be 24-4.
There's a lot of gimmies in the Eastern Conference.
But they've
not
also
losing
played
to Philly this year. You play them five more times.
They played 10 home games and four on the road, right? But here's the good part. They've only played two games in their division. So they've went to Boston and won. We thought that was impressive at the time. We're like, wow. And we actually were impressed by Boston because Boston made it close for the last 3 or 4 minutes. So they've beaten Boston. Who else have they beaten? Philadelphia?
Yeah.
I'm asking. Yep. So they haven't played the Knicks yet, and they haven't played the Nets. But they're going to have a slew of division games by the end of things. And what are they going to lose? 3 out of 24 of those? 3 out of 25 of those?
Here's the reason why, if you say NBA Finals for this club, you shouldn't be laughed out of a room. Because you look last, because I get it. People are, you know, at this juncture of, say, the Blue Jays season, right? They had won 22 or 26, whatever it was, at a 6.5 game lead in the division. But this was all coming as a surprise, right? It was playoffs would be a dream for the Blue Jays. We know the Raptors are making the playoffs. We know they're winning the Atlantic, and we know they're going to be a top four seed. But unlike a year ago, there's no Miami Heat or even Indiana Pacers where you know if the Raptors match up with them, you're just not going to win that series.
No, and people have to... There's two things I want to say. 416-870-0590, star 590. Then we'll get to the phones. You can text us 590-590, Brady and Walker, 805. There's two things I want to say. One is we got to stop this thinking that the Cavs... And I didn't think this from the beginning, and now I'm even more sure. The Cavs in 14-15 are the Miami Heat of 10-11.
Well, they're not.
They started slow and then picked up the pace. Listen,
they're going to be a good team.
Kevin Love loves his stats. Okay, loves his stats. He's never been able to get the T-Wolves to the playoffs. Love and Irving aren't even remotely Wade and Bosch 4 years ago. Chris Bosch is a lock, solid Hall of Famer, and Dwayne Wade's one of the best point guards we've seen in the last 30 years. Shooting guards, I should say. But we're not talking about that with Love and Irving.
But the Cavaliers in the old LeBron regime did make the finals, but yeah, when LeBron dragged them there himself.
But that's almost a good point as to it's been 20 years of this in the Eastern Conference, and we have seen not very good basketball teams get to the Eastern Finals. And Cleveland was one, and a couple of those New Jersey Nets teams were just cannon fodder for the Lakers and the Spurs. That Orlando team with Dwight Howard made it 5 years ago, and it was just Dwight Howard and a bunch of guys back then. So the other thing I'd say is, unlike the Jays, people were even, Andrew, when the Jays started, people were all, hey, the Jays got to do this and that. You know what's a boring conversation? Hey, what should the Toronto Raptors do come trade deadline time? Nothing. Not a thing. Don't do anything. Don't change this group in the least.
Just don't.
Leave it.
Don't roll your ankles or hit your hand on the rim and break three fingers. That's about it.
We looked it up. Raptors are 7-1 odds to win the Eastern Conference. The Cavs are still almost even money, 6-5, but that's because, hey, the Vegas knows the money's going to go to the Cavs. The Bulls have slipped to 7-4, so almost 2-1 odds. And none of it's going to be easy, but 14 games in, nobody talked about the Raptors being a number one seed. Nobody did. And I don't know that they're going wire to wire to do it, but what I know is they're going to have an opportunity to do it. Sure. We didn't know that a month ago.
We got a Mike in Toronto. You're on Brady and Walker this morning. Mike, is it stupid to put NBA Finals and Toronto Raptors in the same sentence?
Yes and no, and I'll explain. See, if you're watching the game on TV, there's a big difference. If you go down there and you're a student of the game, their offense is not a good offense. Their offense doesn't flow. They're putting up numbers right now, but there's a big difference between putting up numbers in the regular season and in the playoffs, when it becomes lockdown, every possession is a half-court game. There's no running, and you got to execute. They're going to have an issue come execution time. And if this Bulls team is healthy, scoring against the Bulls is not going to be easy, and I think that's where they run into trouble. Cleveland, bring them on. It's not a problem because they got no depth at all. After the three, they're just horrible. The Raptors would beat them in a seven-game series. But the Bulls is a team you got to worry about. But having said that, the East is wide open, and it may be just the Bulls in their way. If they can find a way to beat the Bulls.
Well, and what would be nice is being a one seed and having the Bulls be a three and having a tough first round. And not just a team that knocks them off, but potentially, or doesn't knock them off, but potentially takes them a lot deeper. You want an easy, last year would have been, Miami was going to take out Toronto no matter what in the second round. You can't have a first round that goes seven games and is so back and forth like the Brooklyn series.
Now, Mike makes a good point there because we saw it a year ago, right? The Raptors were this high-flying upstart team. And while we all think pound for pound probably more talented than the Brooklyn Nets were last year, the Nets, just by a smidge, played a little better of that playoff style of basketball. And he's right about the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
But the Raptors still have 65 games, 67 games, to try to adjust to that a little bit.
Steve writes on text, good point on the teams that haven't been very good to win the East. Miami, the last 4 years, has tricked us into thinking you have to be a great team to get through the East. And that's exactly it. I mean, we knew when the Big Three got created and they had the smoke show ceremony and all that, that this was going to be a dominant Eastern Conference team. Before that, there wasn't that much dominance with the Orlandos and the Cavs LeBron team. I can tell you those two Piston teams, they weren't great, not by any stretch of the imagination. There's not a Hall of Famer on those teams.
Joe in Mississauga, you're on Brady and Walker. Is there a team that the Toronto Raptors just could not beat in a series right now, Joe?
Yeah, well, this Raptor team, just looking at them over the years, I mean, it was a team that I saw winning games or leading going into the fourth quarter and then falling apart. And what I see really noticeable this year is their fourth quarter. I mean, they lost. They had a 15-point lead yesterday, but they came back.
Yeah.
And it was a team that we were always disappointed. I don't know how many times it was a last-minute shot or they were going into the fourth leading by 10 and they just collapsed. So I see them deeper than they've ever been. I see them together, and man, they can do it. It's interesting. They're not five. It's not the starting five. They can go 6-7, and I think that's where they're overtaking these other guys.
Well, thanks for the phone call. I agree with a lot of those sentiments. They're absolutely winning games. They lost last year, the previous year, the previous decade. They lost opening night against Atlanta. They've lost that game before. They've lost the game in Boston before. They've lost the home game against Orlando. The Magic came in here and made it tricky a couple weeks ago. It'll correct itself. This isn't a team that's going to flirt with 60-plus wins. And like I said, I don't think they'll be 20. They're not going to have this 14-game mark in the next 14 games because of the trips and the games they got to play. They may lose the next two games this week.
The only thing is, don't forget that the pace they're on right now, they've been on a similar pace for about a calendar year. After that Rudy Gay trade, they exploded, and they've been dynamite ever since, right? 50 wins feels like a lock,
so you're
let alone possibly 60.
Last year's record's a little bit deceiving because it's pre-, pre-gay.
The first 20 games were a write-off.
Pre-gay, post-gay. Yeah. I said that right, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, starting 6-12, they then go 42 and, you know, they went 42-22 the rest of the way.
And they feel like they're better this year in a weaker conference.
42-22 the rest of the way. It's amazing to even say that because that's almost a 667 pace. One more on this. William in Toronto at 813. You're on Brady and Walker. Lou Merlone coming up next from WEI in Boston. Go ahead, William.
Morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'll just make a real quick note here. This goes back, in my opinion, to the typical why pro guys don't want to play in Toronto because of the media pressure.
Yeah.
Give them kudos for where they are right now. Absolutely. Let's enjoy the ride because they're playing fantastic. But two perfect examples. Look at the year the Leafs went 10-0 to start. Instantly, they're cup guys. And then look at the Jays when they made those big deals. Oh, they automatically number one World Series contenders. Like just.
Well, I suppose what I'd say is this. The Leafs made the conference finals that year. They went 10-0 and lost to a pretty deep Vancouver team. So
conference finals, yes, but right away because they started off great, they were automatically put in the media as cup contenders.
Mm.
No, like number one guy.
So which of the Raptors do you think will feel the media pressure the most? That because they'll of our 8-minute segment this morning, which guy's going to crack?
I honestly don't know if anyone's going to crack because they're all playing solid. Yeah.
Oh, so that thanks for the phone call. That completely contradicts what you said. Got to plan these out a little bit better.
The only thing is, quit giving the callers a hard time. Let them
talk. I will give the callers a hard time.
The only thing is that
got to be good to be on the show.
People act like Toronto is so different because the media talks about its sports teams. Every market in every sport, when they sign big name free agents, when they make a big trade, when they come out of the gates flying at 12-2 or 10-1, everybody has these conversations. And some teams go on to win the championships, and some don't, because that's how it works.
You know where there's pressure also? 40 or 50 Division I colleges, and the pressure's on a 19-year-old or 20-year-old quarterback. And some guys crack, and some guys don't. I don't think we're looking at NBA play. Everybody loves this team right now. You know what pressure is when you're about to lose your job. Pressure is getting caught. Pressure is a coach about to get fired. None of that's the case here with the Raptors. And we all agree, we're almost going to judge them based on regular season. Right? Or rather, the playoffs, I should say, instead of regular season. We all knew they were going to win the division. We all knew they were going to be one of the top three seeds. Come mid-April, that's when it's money time. That's when there is pressure. But it's got nothing to do with, God, it's got nothing to do. Does anyone really think the Leafs haven't won 47 years because there's pressure here? Or has it been overall incompetence?
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about?
You know who's talking about championships right now? The city of Boston, the New England Patriots,
pressure.
The Red Sox, the big thing yesterday, signing a couple free agents. Lou Merlone is going to join us at 8:22 to talk about it. First, we want to send you to the ACC this weekend. Toronto takes on Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. Here's your third and final clue. Name us this mystery player. He signed with Toronto as a free agent, but before that was once traded for one of the Bure brothers. Give us a call if you know who this is. 416-870-0590, *590 on your cell phone.
Imagine the pressure on Ovechkin Saturday night, right? Hockey night in Canada. The game's on TV.
It's in Toronto, so there's more pressure.
I mean, he didn't go back and have to play in front of Vladimir Putin or anything 8 months. But think of the pressure Saturday's game's going to provide for him.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
8:23, Brady and Walker, good morning. Congratulations to Kyle in Oshawa.
Tight, yeah!
Pretty good game. You have tickets, too. You're going to the ACC to see the Washington Capitals on Saturday. He knew our mystery player this morning.
Who is it?
Jonas Höglund.
He
fit all the criteria. He played in the Swedish Elite League until he was 24. He played in three Canadian markets.
So did you, though.
Yes, I did. Played in three Canadian markets and was traded for Val Bure when he went from the Flames to the Montreal Canadiens. So there you go.
And I don't know who Jonas Hogan's wife is, but I know who Val Bure's wife is.
That's right. Jody Sweetin.
I don't think that's right.
The other one.
I don't think that's right either. Matt Barnaby will join us at 8.
That's right. The other one.
Is it?
Candace Cameron.
Matt Oh, that was the character's name. Matt Barnaby will join us at 8:40. Did you see the thing about
Jodie Sweetin was the other actor in the show.
Did you know this story about John Stamos? It's nothing dirty. Do you know the story?
I know a dirty story about John Stamos.
No, he was doing this new show called Members Only, and they hadn't even aired the pilot yet, but they showed it to, like, test audiences and the reaction. They've canceled the series, and the show hasn't aired yet. Like, it's one thing in radio. Like, everybody waits for the axe to fall, but you hope you can get, like, on the air before they cancel your idea for a show you've already shot. 6 or 7 episodes, they're never going to air it. That's one thing.
Well, to be fair, I think there's a lot of pilots that suffer that fate.
Yeah, but it made it through the pot. Yeah, you're right, but it made it through the pilot process, and they had a time slot for it and everything. Like, I think Heather Graham had a show that was canceled after, like, one episode, and you're going, God, how bad could the test reaction have been if you get on the air once, one time? Like, we all know in radio, they give 3 years to a show. And my theory is you should give it 8 years. You should really give it 8.
Shooting for the moon there. 3 years? God, if this show makes 3 years, I'll buy you dinner.
Our next guest played 9 years in the major leagues, and he'll double that with his radio career. Lou Merlone joins us from WEI in Boston. Boston's the same, Ray. Why? 3 years? 3 years is reasonable? Get a show's chemistry going, yeah?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that say, come on, you said 3 years. What are you doing after just a year and a half?
And every show that gets taken off the air, then they have, like, a really good, like, ratings month or whatever. You see, you made a big mistake. You can say that to the bosses that be. So how is it? Let's start with the Red Sox. How is it there in terms of, this is an incredibly potent lineup now, Lou, but is every Red Sox fan asking the same thing? Will we have to deal one of our bats for a starting pitcher? Is that just the inevitable climax to this, if you will?
Yeah, it is a little bit different. It's a little bit strange, actually. You know, in 2010, that offseason, they sent Lackey and traded for Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford, and everybody was so ecstatic, right? Everybody was, greatest team ever. Now, all of a sudden, you wake up, and it's Panda and it's Hanley Ramirez, and it's almost like split 50-50. Like, it's weird. Like, people almost aren't happy about it because they look at it as, this is a waste of money. This is stupid. One is fine, but why did you have to go get two? Where's everybody going to play? We still need pitching. Some of that is true. I think it'll work out to where once you went out and got that one big bat and now two big bats, you kind of made the Yohan assessment as, I think, expendable. And I think that's what you're going to see happen. There's some teams out there that have a pitcher on a one-year deal, or 1 year before he's a free agent, same with Cespedes. So I think maybe you get a swap there with a couple of guys, but they now have to address pitching. Yeah, their lineup is potent, but they don't have any innings. I mean, they don't have any innings. Joe Kelly, Clay Buchholz, that's right now 1-2. That's just not going to cut it.
I understand what you're saying, because this appears to be a fan base that might be a little gun-shy about the big signings, where
right. We
can understand all the romanticism out of, that just that gang of swashbucklers that ended up winning everything 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it's also a little bit of ownership's fault here, because they jumped on the bandwagon 4 years ago, and then when they traded everybody, they've been really preaching borderline brainwashing, a fan base is saying, it's not smart to spend, and we've learned our lessons, and look at Toronto north of the border, look what they're doing, and look at the Yankees, and some people just haven't learned their lesson. And I always felt like that was sort of like waving your finger at everybody and thinking you're smarter, which is exactly what they tried to do last year. And now all of a sudden here they are realizing that, the prospects didn't work out, and they're spending the money. So it's almost like, they're getting what they deserve. I mean, they should have known that. Yeah, you can spend money on role players if you've already got the superstars. If you've already got Jacoby Ellsbury and John Lester and John Lackey and David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia, you can bring in your complements of Victorino and Napoli and guys like that. But when you start losing them, Lester's, Ellsbury's, you got to replace them, and that costs money. So they sort of did this to themselves, and now they're spending some money again.
Lou Merlone joining us on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's it all mean for Xander Bogaerts? There's a guy similar, I suppose, in some way to Jose Iglesias, who they flipped for Jake Peavy, and Peavy was important. Is Bogaerts an obvious candidate to get flipped? Does he have a place to play anymore with the boppers now on the left side of the infield?
It still hasn't been really determined, but I'd be surprised if Xander Bogaerts not the shortstop. I'd hate to see them trade him. There was some talk about Hanley kind of agreeing to change positions, and the thought was he was coming here to play left field. Now, we'll see how that plays out. I'd be curious to see if not only Cespedes, because they got two of these guys, if Mike Napoli is a guy that they start shopping and maybe try Hanley Ramirez at first base to keep him healthy, quite frankly, because going on playing left field, I don't know if that's going to keep him healthy. But I think Xander, 21 years old, I mean, obviously you have that opportunity to get blown away with some kind of trade. But I want to see him improve. I want to see the first step quickness, the anticipation, and pick up a little bit of urgency defensively, kind of speed the game up defensively. I want one more year to see that. At 21, most kids are in A-ball or AA trying to make those transitions and trying to get better the next year. And that's why I think it's tough to kind of evaluate Xander. But I don't think Hanley was brought here to play short. So we'll see how this thing plays out.
Lou Maloney, our guest, Brady Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The New England Patriots, they're a club that I feel like we've kind of forgotten about them over the last few years. We know they're good, but the conversation has been, well, yeah, but are they as good as they were a few years ago? This year's addition right now is at least turning our heads. What about yours?
Yeah, defense. And that's the thing. It's like almost seems like since 03-04, they went back to back. Defense got old, and Brady started taking off, and started scoring 35, 40 points a game, and then everybody kept talking about how great they were. But the reality was, is that come January, they never had a good defensive team since they won Super Bowls. It's all been Brady during the regular season. He put up big numbers, and this year's group's different. And I think that's probably the biggest difference is the defense. What Revis has done, what Browner has done. The question was, Brady has to be great in order for this team to win, And once you get into the postseason, you play better defenses. Teams might struggle. If Brady is subpar, you don't have the defense to win football games. I think that's the biggest difference that we've seen in Foxborough. They're giving up 20, 24, 21 points, but they're to Denver. They're to the luck. And the Chicago, some good offensive teams. And if you watch those games, the defense were outstanding against Indianapolis and Denver, even though they gave up 20 points. And that's been the biggest difference, I think. And obviously a healthy Gronk keeps that offense running.
Yeah, Gronk's got a different alarm clock than Jonas Gray. I mean, he gets there. That's all it takes. You can't set.
Yeah, I'm not sure Gronk sleeps, to be honest with you. I think he just sort of.
Well, your alarm. I've learned it the hard way. Your alarm should never be your phone. You always have to have a backup. Nothing wrong with a good AC alarm clock that you plug in. Nothing wrong with it.
You got to go old school. And if you don't, maybe you don't get any snaps. Maybe you don't get any rushes. That's what happens. You learn the hard way.
That's part of it, dude. Hey, have a great show today. Thanks for this.
All right, guys. You got it.
Lou Maloney from WEEI in Boston, former Red Sox, former Cleveland Indian, and Jack, jock of all trades in Boston, WEEI.
If our over-under is 3 years on this show, his has to be 6 or 7.
Being conservative.
He's really good.
I know you'd rather be on Walker and Maloney than Brady and Walker, but it's then you'd have to live in Boston. I know you hated visiting
there. I love
there.
Boston.
Oh, do you?
Great. Bud Lights are like $2.50.
Yeah, but the media pressure. How would you?
That's true.
How would you get away? And the callers.
Walker,
how would you get away? From
Walker and Walker would be just fine.
That's
with
true.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. Walker and Barnaby. How about that?
Hey,
I'd pay pay per view to see that.
If
show.
I could run across the beach into my own arms, I would. You know that.
I'm sure you've tried it. To be perfectly honest.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back at it. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I think that's part of the aphrodisiac of sport, that every day when you come in, that someone's watching, someone's going to evaluate, someone's going to judge what your work was like, and some days you don't like it, but it's there, and I think that's part of the joy that comes with being involved in professional sports. Say
goodbye. 8:42, Brady and Walker. The voice you heard was Pat Quinn, passing away yesterday at the age of 71. Big time in the Vancouver market, big time in the Toronto market as well. Had a big, lasting, lingering influence on two Canadian NHL franchises. Not easy to do.
No, and yeah, Vancouver really resurrected them from, GM place. Not that Pat Quinn built it, but the Canucks got cool again and popular again enough so that there's a bit of a groundswell. And they've had ownership changes, and they had some bad moments. Pat Quinn left, and then disastrous moments with, you know, with the Pavel Bure trade. There wasn't much they could do, but it got to that point where they had to trade Bure. And that same thing was sort of resurrected here. There was a bit of a gap, Andrew, of 2.5 years or so between Pat Burns and Pat Quinn. I'll say this, not many people, as much as we romanticize Pat Burns, incredibly popular and deserving of the Hall of Fame and all that, people weren't, there wasn't an outcry when Pat Burns was fired. It was like, yeah, he came in, guns blazing, got 3 great years out of the Leafs. Now it's time to move on. But when Pat Quinn...
Yeah, people know that about coaches, right?
Yeah, people weren't sure, and they didn't like the ownership change, and there was a lot of that felt uncomfortable, Pat Quinn kind of being a GM coach. You know and I know, we're not... It happens so much in the junior ranks, it's almost preferable in junior ranks. We're not going to see an NHL head coach GM combo again. Mike Keenan did it. Pat Quinn did it.
Yeah.
Scotty Bowman did it. You're not going to see it again.
Yeah. It's not going to happen again. So what's your, you know, what was your first reaction? Yes. About 11 a.m. The news comes down that Pat Quinn has passed away. What do you go first to in your mind?
Well, just, I mean, you think about the in-person meetings and being in, it's the same thing everybody else has said, being in those media conferences with him. The dominance, really, I wasn't living here for a lot of the time Pat Quinn was here, but when Leafs and Red Wings barely played, and when he'd come down, it was a huge event when the Leafs would come, and Pat Quinn was almost always the coach. But it's also the dominance over the Senators. Like, think about how closely you'd watch those Leafs-Sens playoff series, and there was never a point where you thought, well, the Leafs don't have the upper hand. Some years, the Sens probably had more talent, even if they didn't have the better goalie.
They were the one seed. They had Havlat and Alfredson and Chara and Redden.
People love those Joseph Lalim matchups, but yeah, the talent Ottawa had was pretty undeniable, and yet they just felt like poundings. Even the one year it went seven games, it felt like the Leafs were up 4-0 at the end of the first period of game seven. So just that dominant, the Sens fans will be like, that was the first thing they probably thought about yesterday was, man, the Quinn Leafs. And I mention it as well, and I think it's apt. It's the last time the Pat Quinn Leafs were the last time you were really able to be proud of the Maple Leafs. And we all hope that's coming again. We all do, but that's his legacy here.
It's going to resonate differently no matter what age you are. And for me, I still go back to 2002, the Olympics in Salt Lake City, and everything that led up until that gold medal game. I'll tell you about it in a second. First, though, we do want to play this. There was an outpouring of thoughts and memories about Pat Quinn right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan yesterday. Wayne Gretzky, Dave Donis, Cliff Fletcher, Glenn Healy, Brian Burr, Darcy Tucker, all guys that were very tightly connected in some capacity. Here's just a sample of it.
Just a really tremendous man who had time and thoughts and energy for everyone that he was around, and he was a real special person. You don't replace people like that.
I think everyone that worked with him or for him over the years would tell you the same thing, that he always took care of the people that were with him.
He was a real genuine person, really caring, cared about the people, cared about the players. He was a player's coach.
He was a man onto his own, and as has been said so many times, the presence he had when he walked into a room, he was very commanding.
I guess the best memories of Pat, when he used to get, I guess, upset or a little angry on a bench, he used to pound his big fist on the glass or on the water coolers and stuff. And he was just a big, intimidating man, but he had a big heart, too. He's a great, great man.
I found out the news this morning here. I haven't cried like that in a long time. You know, I had a great deal of pride playing for Pat Quinn. The understanding of how good he was to the players made us play even harder for him on a nightly basis. He wasn't the type of guy that's going to kiss you and hug you, but you knew how he felt about you just through his eyes. And he had those caring eyes, and the guy that cared about everybody in the locker room.
So that's Pat Quinn. Thoughts from an awful lot of hockey names and some Hall of Famers and future Hall of Famers there as well. Canucks will host New Jersey tonight. That game's, by the way, on Sportsnet Pacific, 10 o'clock. Obviously, if you have the Center Ice Package or Rogers NHL Game Center Live, you'll see it. I'm sure there'll be some touching moments. Pat had stayed in BC, didn't come back for the Hockey Hall of Fame last week. He was obviously on the selection committee for that and had been for a few years. And then the Leafs' first chance to honor Pat Quinn. I know there's people that say, boy, we don't need to celebrate the Hound line again. We don't need this celebration and that celebration. And what's with all the bagpipes? But Saturday should be a really special night, and I'm sure the Leafs will do it properly, do it right, do it poignantly when they host the Capitals on Saturday. So I'd advise, if you're there for Caps Leafs Saturday, get there early because it's a great chance to pay tribute to a guy that that meant a lot to Leafs fans.
Jeff Blair is going to join us in a few minutes. Now, Matthew Barnaby having trouble with his phone line, so hopefully we'll hook up with him later this week.
How convenient, given the Jets lost 38-3 last night to the Buffalo Bills.
I think he's used to it. I don't think this is anything new.
No, it's not. It shouldn't be.
This season with the Jets.
Yeah.
But I mentioned the 2002 Olympics, and that's the first thing, having not grown up in this market, watching the Leaf games, of course, but not being in and around those you know press scrums like you, I remember how big of a win, how big of a victory that was in Salt Lake City, to the point where the Vancouver Olympics were great in 2010. And yeah, I was a very proud Canadian again in Sochi in 2014. But nothing in my lifetime will ever compare to Canada beating the U.S. for the first time Olympic gold in 50 years in 2002. And Pat Quinn was the guy behind the bench. And of course, after they lost that first game to Sweden, making the call to go from his own goaltender, Curtis Joseph, over to Martin Brodeur and you know, one that paid off.
Well, and thus, things were never the same again with Curtis Joseph. It was scant months later. I don't know if it's the be-all and end-all as to why he took the money and went to Detroit. And listen, Detroit wanted to bring Dominic Hasek back a year after Cujo being there. It was sort of, his career was never the same, and he wasn't as beloved here anymore. Joseph, I'm talking about. It's almost like the fan base sided with Pat Quinn. He got two really good years out of Ed Belfour. We should mention as well, now, I would have been a kid. Jeff Blair would have remembered this streak well, but this streak, you talk about streaks, there's so many in baseball that'll never be broken. The 35-game undefeated streak, I was just a kid when the Flyers did this, and it was sort of the end of the Canadiens' run. They were defending champs, but you'd had that sense. Ken Dryden had quit. You had that sense that it was going to go somewhere else, and the Islanders were that chic, hot, young team. The Flyers went 25 wins, 10 losses from the third game of the season through the 38th game of the season. 25-0-10. The previous NHL record
ties,
was 28 games. And Jeff Blair joins us now. That's probably remember that record. That also, the funny thing was they rotated Pete Peters and Phil Meyer back and forth. They alternated every single. There wasn't all these sports talk phone. Hey, a goalie controversy. Who's the real number one? He didn't care. And that Flyers team went to the finals against the Islanders, lost in six games with the Bob Nystrom goal, but that's how close Pat Quinn got. That's the closest he ever got to, I guess, Game 7 with Vancouver to a Stanley Cup. You had a great 11 o'clock hour yesterday. I know it's sort of on-the-fly radio, but your call with Glenn Healy, a couple others, it's amazing. I almost feel like, I hate saying we over-appreciated Pat Burns, but we should really talk in the same reverential tones in Toronto about Pat Quinn as we do Pat Burns, and sometimes we don't, maybe.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for that, of course, is just, you know, it's unfortunate, but it was such a fight to get Pat Burns into the Hall of Fame that I think that kind of, you know, that narrative sort of took control of everything, right? And but you're right, you know, and it's funny, I was watching, normally I don't pay attention to like man in the street interviews or person in the street interviews, but for whatever reason yesterday, there was a bunch of them on outside the Hockey Hall of Fame. And they were talking to fans who were there. And I just realized Pat Quinn was so popular. And it sounds stupid to say that now. Of course, the guy was popular. Just look at, you know, everything everybody's been saying about him. But you realize how popular he was with the fans in this city. Mm-hmm. And because
coaches aren't always that.
No. And you know, one of the things that I kind of lost sight of. And then yesterday you go back and read and Healy made the point about how many guys relate to kids, you know, taking a junior team to a gold medal. How many people, 66, 65, however old he was when they won, but he's related to kids, 2009, whatever, 2008. He's related to young guys in the early 2000s. He related to guys in the 90s. He related to guys in the 80s.
He kept his coolness.
He managed to communicate through all these eras.
He kept his coolness for kids who are 18. They'd look at him and go, that's not some old out of touch dude.
No,
that's
exactly.
A cool guy
That's like, you know what he was like your cool single uncle, right? The guy at 66 has got just living life, having a great time.
Yeah.
Everybody likes him. You look at him and you go, God, I mean, that guy's like, he's got the spirit of a 40-year-old, and that's what Quinn was like.
And that said, you were living here, Andrew and I wouldn't have been, but I always think of him in 06 with the whole There's all this MLSE power struggle. Petty here. He's going to hire Rob Babcock. He's going to hire John Ferguson. With every other manager, Jeff, I can even think of, like, people were ready to move off of Pat Burns in 96. Yeah. They were okay with
that. That's true.
They were ready to move off of Cito Gaston. He's the one guy, I think, in Toronto in my lifetime. Maybe Roger Nielsen's the other one where you go, God, don't have it end this way. Don't have it end with Pat Quinn sort of not being able to call it. The first year he misses the playoffs, you fire him for Paul Maurice. I think people still have such a bad feeling in their stomach about how it happened.
I think they do because he was such an empathetic person, and that's the way he presented himself. He was, I made the point. So it reminds me a little bit of Joe Torre, and just the guy, you just looked at the guy and you go, yeah, this guy's a nice man. I mean, it's that simple. You just looked at him and said, he's a nice man. He's got empathy for a lot of people. He could be a hard ass. He could be a real hard ass. If you talk to guys who played for him. But
they showed the footage of him shoving the Sun photographer into the elevator during the Domi suspension
stuff. But there's a real humanity about the guy, and I think that's what we miss, frankly, in a lot of coaches nowadays.
Like Walker shoved a guy in the hallway the other day. I have idea what division of Rogers he worked for.
We got to go because I got to have a meeting with HR. But all that and ahead on tomorrow's show as well. Jeff Blair on at 9. Are the Raptors the best team of these? You'll talk to Paul Jones about it at 9 and Scotty Bowman. Don't miss that on with Jeff Blair at 9:40 this morning. Have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.